people see problems and shake their heads. They experience adversity and they throw up their hands. They look at challenges and ask why, not seeking a solution, just venting frustration. When they encounter problems, they see no possibilities. They become victims of negative circumstances and cannot help themselves or others. Transformational leaders see things differently. They ask, why not? Because they are always thinking about trying to create a better future. They see more than others see. Of course, they see the problems. They may even be surrounded by them. But they also see potential in those problems. They believe that there is always an answer, a solution, a better way, a brighter future. That belief creates anticipation, not desperation, during the darkest hours. How we view things determines how we do things. When I put myself first as a leader, I saw everything through the filter of my own selfishness. After my leader shift, I started to see things through the lens of service. I started to ask, how can I help more people and how can I help people more? My friend Dave Ramsey said, organizations are not limited by their opportunity, they are limited by their leader. If you don't see the things others don't, you can't lead them to a better future. Transformational leaders say things others do not say. Transformational leaders speak up. They leverage their influence by speaking bold words about a better future. Their voice becomes a tool of transformation. Think of the bold words said by transformational leaders who are willing to describe a better future. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "I have a dream." It took courage for him to be the voice of change when others opposed him. As I have become a better communicator, I've tried to use my voice to facilitate positive change. At times I was misunderstood, but I made decisions that I believed were right, such as when I stood on the floor of a national meeting and promoted a policy of inclusiveness that I knew had no chance of passing. I said no to becoming the new host of a prestigious national radio show because I declined to sign a doctrinal statement that I didn't agree with. I handed back a $1 million gift given to my nonprofit organization because I proposed going in a direction that the donor did not like. I changed the nonprofit equip from a training organization to a transformational one. None of these decisions was popular when I shared it, and not everyone understood. But sometimes that's what a leader must do. Say things that others won't. Transformational leaders believe things that others do not believe. Transformational leaders believe that they can make a difference. That becomes their passion. President John F. Kennedy said he believed that everyone had a change the world speech in them. I was 13 years old when he said that, and I can still remember how I felt when I heard those words. Although I was only a young teenager, I felt that he was talking directly to me. I believed him, because he believed it. When I reached my middle 20s, I concluded that everything rises and falls on leadership. Over time, that belief has been a conviction that I have lived and taught. Today, it is the cause that I have given my life to. It is the subject of my Change the World speech. Believing you can make a difference changes everything. When transformational leaders believe that their cause can make a difference, then they bring conviction to their leadership. Without this conviction, you may be able to get people to follow you, and you will be a good leader. But only when you understand that the higher calling of leadership is to get people to follow your cause can you become a great leader. Transformational leaders believe in others. They are belief magnets. People are drawn to them because they believe in their message, and they believe it will help people. They realize that one is too small a number to achieve greatness. So they rally people together to make a difference. They extend their hand and ask others to join them in their mission. Abraham Lincoln said, "I am a success today because I had a friend who believed in me, and I didn't have the heart to let them down." Transformational leaders are belief makers who help people to believe in themselves. Transformational leaders feel things that others do not feel. Peter Marshall said, "A different world cannot be built by indifferent people. Passion creates energy and tenacity in people. It fires up leaders and the people who join them for their cause. That fire helps them endure. the way Gandhi did in his fight for Indian independence. It was a process that took 54 years. During that time, Gandhi was attacked, rejected, imprisoned, sick with malaria, and was finally victorious. Passion carried him forward. I've seen passion emerge in the lives of people that I lead, and it has changed their lives and the way that they lead. This happens every time I invite a group of John Maxwell team coaches to go with me to another country to train roundtable facilitators. Hundreds of coaches have volunteered to travel overseas, paid all their own expenses, trained 12 hours a day, traveled in less than ideal circumstances to help them, and they gave up their time, their money, and their energy to do it. And they love it. They tirelessly give of themselves. And yet at the end I hear over and over that they feel that they've received more than they gave. And they want to do it again. Paul Martinelli, the president of the John Maxwell team, said, "When the light goes on in your life, you want to turn everyone else's light on." I love that. And it's true. Transformational leaders have their lights on, and they want to help others turn theirs on. Transformational leaders do things that others do not do. Do you know what happens when a procrastinator has something to do? Nothing. Do you know what happens when a transformational leader has something to do? They get moving. In fact, they are often so eager that their actions follow this pattern. Ready, fire, aim. While fear causes many people to shrink back from the unknown and avoid challenges that lie ahead, it causes transformational leaders to prepare and work harder. How do they overcome their fears? By tapping into their sense of purpose, and by believing in a cause that is much bigger than themselves. They want to make a difference, and the only questions they need to answer are, what kind of a difference can I make, and how big of a difference can it be? Their strong sense of purpose propels them to do what others are not willing to do. I've already mentioned that my greatest desire is to see a country transformed, so much that the leaders and the citizens acknowledge that positive change. Now that's a BHAG. That's a big, hairy, audacious goal. And I may not live to see it happen. So why am I doing everything I can to be part of this? Because I would rather try something big that is almost impossible than something small that won't make a difference. If you want to make the leadership from trained to transformational leadership, I encourage you, you have to have that similar, audacious attitude. Number two, focus on your own transformation before leading others to it. In chapter three, I discussed how I developed the acronym REAL, with the E representing equipping. As soon as I understood how important equipping was, I studied the process and discovered the best way to train others. I came up with a five-step process that works no matter what task you're trying to equip another person to do. Here is that equipping process. Number one, I do it. Secondly, I do it and you're with me. Thirdly, you do it and I'm with you. Fourth, you do it. And finally, you do it and someone is with you. Now, why do I mention this? Because I want you to notice that the process begins with, I do it. If I want to help others be transformational, I must first be transformed. I cannot give what I do not have. Neither can you. The first person you must lead will always be you. If you want to see positive changes in your world, the first person you must change is you. As leaders, you and I have to be changed to bring change. We teach what we know, but we reproduce who we are. Before I personally experienced the transformation of shifting from a desire to make my life successful to a desire to help other people's lives improve, it never entered my mind that I could be a catalyst for positive change. It never entered my heart either. There was no passion within me to help others experience positive change. However, when I began to experience positive change in my life and became less selfish, I was eager to share what was happening with others. Knowing that I was changing got me excited about helping others change too. For nearly 20 years, volunteer associate trainers from my nonprofit training organization, EQUIP, have traveled to countries to teach people how to become better leaders. In recent years, we shifted from a classroom model of teaching to a roundtable model of facilitation, and we've placed a greater emphasis on asking the trainers to live the transformation before they travel overseas to train others in it. Specifically, before they go train others to lead roundtables, we ask them to gather a group in their own community and facilitate a roundtable there. We want them to experience for themselves what they intend to teach others. Why? Because we know transformation must occur in us before we can take it to others. If you want to lead any positive change, you need to realize this. Transformation begins with you. If you're not willing to change, you're not going to be able to help anyone else. Philosopher and author James Allen wrote, "Men are anxious to improve their circumstances, but are unwilling to improve themselves. They therefore remain bound." If you want to lead positive change, don't remain bound. Be willing to change within. Start with you. That's always the first step to making a difference. Number 3. Take positive action based on your internal changes. An essential step in the leadership from trained to transformational is a commitment to take action. For real change to occur, we must go from knowing to doing. It's at this point that transformation becomes difficult, yet the results are so beautiful. It's difficult because saying is always easier than doing. It's beautiful because action is what brings transformation. Everything worthwhile in life is uphill, all the way. Transformation requires us to walk uphill, every day, all the way. Most people are unwilling to commit to that. Instead of climbing, they would rather be talking. Well, let's discuss uphill climbing. Or thinking, well, I like to contemplate uphill climbing. Or planning, well, I'll tell you what, let's strategize about uphill climbing. Or surveying, well, let's ask others what they think about uphill climbing. Or studying, well, let's examine what uphill climbing looks like. Or resting, well, let's conserve energy before we start climbing. Transformation is a result of application, not education. That's why Gandhi said an ounce of practice is worth more than tons of preaching. To lead transformationally, you must first live transformed. That takes courage, the courage to let go of the familiar and set off on a better way. Number 4, create an environment that promotes positive change. For years, I've encouraged people to embrace positive change. More recently, my nonprofit organizations have dedicated themselves to promoting transformation. Our experience working with tens of thousands of people has helped us understand what creates an ideal environment, and these are the essentials. Leaders who are passionate about transformation. Jim Collins said transformational movements require transformational leaders. Only transformational leaders can bring about transformation. What I've said for years is true. Everything rises and falls on leadership. This poem by Lawrence Tribble really says it all. One man awake awakens another. The second awakens his next door brother. The three awake can rouse a town by turning the whole place upside down. The many awake can cause such a fuss it finally awakens the rest of us. One man up with dawn in his eyes, surely then, multiplies. Some man or woman has to start that process. The person who does is a transformational leader. Resources that teach good values. Many people are unaware that there is a better way to live. They are stuck in a life that they have because they are not sure where to go, nor do they know how to move beyond their current situation. I am convinced from personal experience and observation that good values are the road to a better life, and placing resources that teach good values in the hands of people turns the light on for them so that they can see a better way. Good values are teachable and reachable. Just one good value in a person's life can bring great benefit. Here are some of the values my nonprofit organizations have helped people to understand and embrace over the years. Attitude. Your attitude colors everything in your life. Commitment. It separates the doers from the dreamers. Competence. The shortest path to credibility is competence. Forgiveness. Forgiveness empowers you to live with a light heart. Initiative. You cannot experience success unless you start. Integrity. Living with integrity leads to a life of wholeness. Personal growth. People who keep learning always have a future. Priorities. Clear priorities show you what to do and where to go. Relationships. The quality of your relationships determines the quality of your life. Work ethic. Working hard brings inner satisfaction every day. We've created resources to help people explore ideas, examine themselves, and decide how they will take action to embrace good values and change their lives. If you desire to shift from a trained leader to a transformational leader, you need to give people resources to help them. Most people cannot find the pathway to a better life without help. Small groups, where people learn and participate. Too often, training that begins in our heads stays in our heads. We learn something new, but we don't apply it to our lives or put it into practice. That's why transformation needs a living laboratory to be effective. That occurs best in a small group of people where all the members of the group share ideas, speak about themselves with candor and honesty, state their intentions, and hold one another accountable. EQUIP and the John Maxwell Leadership Foundation, the two nonprofit organizations I founded, use roundtables in small groups to facilitate change. We found that groups of 4 to 10 can create the perfect environment for people to develop relationships, get to know themselves and others, and experience growth. Most people do not have a high level of self-awareness. They spend so much time and energy projecting a positive image that they don't examine themselves and their motives as much as they could. A safe, small group environment where people see the others as peers. Everyone is asked to participate, and the leader of the group is open and authentic about his or her shortcomings, encourages everyone to participate, ask questions, listen, share, reflect, and commit to taking action. And if members of the group report back the next time they meet to honestly share both failures and success, everyone is encouraged to grow and change. I've experienced the positive power of participating in small groups in my own life. Some of the greatest changes that have determined my most important decisions occurred in small group settings. For example, I accepted the challenge to practice daily personal growth in a small group. I was encouraged to start writing books in a small group. I was inspired to start developing resources for leaders in a small group. I was energized to start developing leaders, again, in a small group. I felt stirred to try leading a transformational movement with a group of few. All these things occurred and more. I wasn't expecting any of those things to happen before I joined those groups. But once I committed to a group and fully engaged in the process, good things began to happen. Small groups can bring big growth. A commitment to reproduce leaders. By definition, for someone to be a leader, he or she must have followers. If you think you're leading but no one is following you, then you're only taking a walk. However, it's not enough to gather followers. To be transformational, leaders must develop and reproduce leaders. I started to learn this lesson more than 30 years ago when I was leading Skyline Church. We recognized the transformational power of small groups, so we started a small group program. Naively, we thought that we could simply put people together in groups and they would flourish. We quickly discovered that if we didn't train leaders, the groups didn't succeed. So we dismantled the program, started training leaders, and relaunched. We were successful this second go-round, but then we learned something else. Trained leaders could sustain a group, but transform leaders could gather, grow, and reproduce groups. They could train other leaders who reached out to other people and trained them also. My nonprofit organizations have embraced this model of growth for transformation. In each round table group, we invite participants to start and facilitate other round table groups when they have experienced positive change themselves. They pass on what they've learned, help facilitate transformation in others, and invite new leaders to rise up and lead groups on their own. In this way, we continually equip leaders to reproduce themselves. When this happens repeatedly, individual transformation leads to group transformation, which leads to community transformation. It starts with transformed leaders who want to lead others to transformation. Number 5, commit to making a difference with others in your community. Making positive changes requires commitment from leaders who want to make a difference. Civil rights leader Walter E. Fauntroy eloquently expressed this in an inspiring speech he delivered at Howard University. He said, "The past is yours. Learn from it. The future is yours. Fulfill it. Knowledge is yours. Use it. Cancer is yours. Cure it. Racism is yours. End it. Injustice is yours. Correct it. Sickness is yours. Heal it. Ignorance is yours. Banish it. War is yours. Stop it. Hope is yours. Confirm it. America is yours. Save it. The world is yours. Serve it. The dream is yours. Claim it." Don't be blindsided by prejudice, disheartened by the times, or discouraged by the system. Face the system. Challenge it. Change it. Confront it. Correct it. Don't let anything paralyze your mind, tie your hands, or defeat your spirit. Take the world, not to dominate it, but to deliver it. Not to exploit it, but to enrich it. Take your dream and inherit the earth. Wow! Change does not happen unless transformational leaders commit themselves to making a difference in their community and invite others to join them in the process. All transformational movements follow a pattern. They occur top-down. Leadership influence filters down, not up. Small to big. Mass movements begin with a few people. Inside out. Inner values determine outward behavior. If you're willing to commit to changing yourself, inviting a small group of people to join you in the process, and preparing other leaders to become agents of transformation, you can change your world. Amazing transformation. I want to close this chapter with a story told to me by my good friend Jerry Anderson. Jerry was a serial entrepreneur who kept failing until he met John Schrock, a successful businessman who lived his life in accordance with positive values that he learned by reading Proverbs. Jerry was mentored by John, and it transformed his life. Jerry went on to become highly successful himself, and out of gratitude and a desire to make a difference, he started teaching the values that he had learned from John to others. When his efforts started to gain momentum, Jerry founded the nonprofit organization LARED to multiply his efforts. In the early 2000s, Jerry's organization was invited to Colombia. The reason? The prisons of Colombia were notoriously corrupt at that time. They were run by organized crime and the most powerful inmates. The prisoners were organized and often armed. Money flowed into the prisons. Some of the more powerful inmates were set up in suites. A few more even equipped with doors to the outside so that associates and women could come and go at will, bringing money and drugs, among other things. This criminal environment bred corruption among the guards. Since they could not beat the inmates, they simply joined them. They served the wealthiest criminals and treated the other inmates like slaves. The system, the prison system, was brutal. On average, there was a murder every day within the 143 prisons. Jerry said in one instance a man's head had been cut off and used as a soccer ball in the prison yard. The Colombian government desired change, but they weren't sure what to do or how to start. They decided to coax General Ricardo Fuentes out of retirement. This general knew that he would not be able to change the prison with more guns or new buildings. What he needed was to change the hearts and the minds of leaders. To do that, he invited Jerry's organization, LARED, into the prison system to work with the guards. Jerry said that soon after the decision was made to bring in LARED, General Fuentes called a press conference to announce that change had begun in the country. LARED introduced character development and values into 143 prisons, believing they could transform the culture of the prison by teaching the guards and the other prison employees character-based values. They met regularly in small round-table groups. Any employee who refused to participate in the weekly meeting lost his job. Slowly, the culture of the prison began to change. The 11,000 prison guards were changing. They no longer embraced corruption. They started treating people better. They asked others to forgive their previous behavior. They started to regain their dignity. The change was so dramatic that prisoners started writing letters to the director asking for the same training that the guards were receiving. What happened next was remarkable. The guards started to allow one prisoner to become part of the round table group of guards. To participate, that inmate had to agree to lead his own group with other prisoners in his cell block. The process began with 56 prisoners. As these individuals were trained in values, their thinking changed. Their values changed. Their actions changed. They were transformed by the time they started their own groups in their own cell blocks. As they led their groups, many of the inmates who were receiving training in the small round tables started to change too. Over several years, the entire prison system and its 80,000 inmates were transformed. Many of the inmates expressed that if they had learned these values earlier in life, they probably would not have ended up in prison. The most impacting value that the inmates embraced was forgiveness. The ability to forgive others allowed them to break the cycle of revenge and freed them from the chains of hatred and bitterness. Jerry said one inmate exclaimed that forgiving the person who had wrongfully put him in jail was the most freeing experience of his life. The man said that before, he had felt handcuffed to that person. Forgiving made him feel free. Perhaps most remarkable of all, the murder rate in the prison went from an average of one per day down to one per year. The success Jerry had in prisons was so dramatic that the Colombian military invited a Red to train their military troops in character development. The governments of other countries contacted him, too. The last time I asked Jerry, he said LaRed had helped people in 44 nations. He estimates that more than 1 million people have participated in the transformational small groups that they form and have been trained in value-based principles. And they're still going strong. That's the power of the impact shift. If you leader shift from trained to transformational leadership, there's no telling what kind of impact you can make or how far your influence will go. As you can tell, as I read this chapter to you, I'm very, very excited about transformation. It truly is my passion. And as I read to you, I'm sure that you heard the words that transformation begins in me. Again, it's not about transforming or changing someone else. It's all about myself being transformed. I'm being changed. Now, the moment that I am changed, then all of a sudden, I have the moral authority and have the passion and belief to help change others. Let me give you an example of that. It's my privilege to be on the board of Global Team Challenge. This is a wonderful organization around the world that helps people get off of an addicted drug life. And the success of Global Team Challenge is quite staggering. Where the average drug program will see maybe 13-15% of the people truly change that enter it, in Global Team Challenge, over 70% of the people that go into their program get off drugs. So you look at the disparity in the percentages and you say, why is Global Team Challenge so much more effective than other drug programs? Very simple. The only people that can teach in the Global Team Challenge drug rehab program are ex-drug addicts. So when a person enrolls into this program, they're not listening to somebody that just has knowledge about drug addiction and can teach them about that. They are with a person who has successfully kicked the drug habit. They have now been transformed. And that belief that they have, because they've been transformed, is transferred into the belief that the people that come to that workshop also feel. So if I'm sitting there and I'm trying to get off drugs, and I'm listening to somebody, and they have successfully gotten off drugs, immediately it gives me hope, it gives me faith. Why? Because if they did it, so can I do it. and that transfers over to the person. That's what transformation is all about. Change lives. And it never happens with others until it happens with me. I would hope that as you're listening to me read this book, and we really only have one chapter to go, I would hope that you would maybe take some time, extra time, on this chapter, because it has the key of not only changing your life, it has the key of changing the lives of others. Because transformation is contagious. So, of all the leaderships that I talk about in the book, this one is the one I hope and pray for you. Because if you truly are transformed, if you truly become a new person, my friend, it will be contagious. And think about it for a moment. Wouldn't you like to be positively contagious to others? I think so. That's why I wrote this book. Chapter 12, Career to Calling, The Passion Shift. Some wake up to an alarm and some wake up to a calling. This last leader shift should be the most natural shift a person can make, yet many people miss it. They are so busy with their day-to-day existence and with making a living that they don't think about it, or they've been told that life has no greater meaning, and they actually believe that. I'm here to tell you that this leader shift is available to you if you are willing to reach for it. What do you do? I want to start by asking you a question. How do you currently think about what you do for a living? There has been research that has been done with employees in the workplace. People tend to fall in three different groups. What's remarkable is that individuals fall into these three categories regardless of the industry they work in, the social status of their profession, their pay, their title. For example, in a study, roughly equal numbers of administrative assistants surveyed fell into these three categories. And employees who mop floors in a hospital were equally likely to fall evenly into these three groups. Think about which best describes you. Number one, you do a job. When you have a job, your main goal is often to earn a living and support your family. You may not think beyond the time you spend on the clock. You may do your job with excellence, or you may simply mark time, but either way, when you finish your day or your shift, you walk away and don't think about it. Satisfaction and fulfillment for people who have a job-only mindset comes from activities outside of work. And while people in this group may hope to advance, they don't think in terms of strategy of career building. It's been said that if you choose a job you love, you will never have to work a day in your life. I think that's good advice, but it should be a starting point, not an ending goal. A job is not your calling, no matter how much money it will allow you to make or how it allows you to serve people. A job is merely a vehicle with the potential to take you towards your calling. That's the way that you should think about it. Number two is you build a career. Most people would acknowledge that it's a step forward to think in terms of developing a career rather than holding a job. When you have a career, the implication is that you're headed in a direction. You're making progress, attaining positive achievements, an upward trajectory of skill mastery, larger responsibilities, and greater earnings are all marks of a successful career. And then number three, you fulfill your calling. Author Frederick Buechner said that our purpose is at that place where the deep gladness meets the world's deep need. Your calling, when you find and embrace it, will result in the merging of your skills, talents, character traits, and experiences. It will make use of your experience, your gifts, and the lessons you've learned. It will be represented by a deep desire to create, lead, inspire, and make a difference. Let's take a look at the difference between a career and a calling. A career is mainly about you, whereas a calling is mainly about others. Career is something you choose. Calling is something that's been chosen for you. When you have a career, you're separated from your best life, and when you have a calling, it's integrated into your entire life. With a career, you can take it or leave it. Well, a calling, it never leaves you. career is something you can do, a calling is something you must do, and a career is measured by success, where a calling is measured by significance. Wouldn't you like to find and fulfill a calling that makes a difference and gets you excited every day for the rest of your life? Finding your calling is like finding your why, the reason you exist, your purpose for living. When you do, it changes everything. When you find your why, you find your way. When you find your why, you find your will. And when you find your why, you find your wings. Your life will never be the same once you know what you're called to do and are working to fulfill it every day. We are all searchers. I believe everyone has the potential to find and fulfill his or her purpose. Everyone has the ability to be called. In each of us, there is a desire to know more and be more. There is something in us that calls us to something bigger. Richard Leiter, author, coach, and founder of Inventure the Purpose Company, has written extensively on the subjects of purpose and calling. He said, "The search for callings is not a trend. It is something much deeper. If it needs a label, it is a searcher." James Cavanaugh captured the essence of the drive when he wrote, "I am one of the searchers. There are, I believe, millions of us. We are not happy, but neither are we really content. We continue to explore life, hoping to uncover its ultimate secret. We humans are searchers for meaning. Work has meaning if it serves others. Calling joins self and service. As Aristotle said, where our talents and the needs of the world cross, there lies our vocation." When I turned 70, I was asked what I found the most surprising about life, and I answered, the brevity of it. I don't feel 70. I don't look well. Okay, let's not go there. It's hard to believe. I've lived 7 decades and been married for more than 50 years. It's remarkable that some of Margaret's and my grandchildren are almost grown. I feel like I just started life's journey, yet I passed the halfway point quite a while ago. Life is short. And its brevity makes the message of this chapter important. The passage of time makes you search for your calling a high priority. As you listen to this, you may be older as I am, or you may be in high school with your entire life and working career ahead of you. Either way, you can find your purpose, your calling. It's never too early, nor is it ever too late. The day I was called. I consider myself to be fortunate. I received my calling when I was 29 years old. I was old enough to appreciate it and young enough to have plenty of time to make the most of it. I want to tell you about the experience. Because I'm a person of faith, my experience involves God. However, you do not need to be a person of faith to receive a calling. You just need to be open and watchful. Before I tell you the story, I want to say something meant for the followers of Christ, in the event that you happen to be one. For all Christians, there is a general calling meant for everyone. Jesus said, "Let me tell you why you're here. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out God flavors on earth." Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out God's colors to the world. Christ's followers are in this world to be salt and light. Salt makes things better, light makes things brighter. The wallpaper on my iPhone has a picture of a salt shaker and a light bulb with the words, "Be these," to remind me every day to try and make the world better and brighter. There's also a specific calling, a compulsion to do something unique. Here God calls people to himself and to a cause so decisively that everything they are, everything they do, and everything they have is invested for him in that cause. Mother Teresa described this as the call within the call. When she felt it on September 10, 1946, on a train ride from Calcutta to Darjeeling, she knew her life's purpose was to serve the poorest of the poor. She immediately set on the course to fulfill that calling of serving poor people in Calcutta, and in time she was able to establish the Missionaries of Charity. I experienced such a calling on July 4, 1976. I was speaking in a celebration of the United States bicentennial, and suddenly I had a clear and compelling sense that God wanted me to invest my life in developing leaders and teaching leadership. It was perhaps the greatest moment of clarity that I've ever had in my life. On the drive home, I told Margaret about it. She listened, as she always does when I'm excited by an idea, and she asked, "What are you going to do?" "Nothing," I answered. She was surprised because back then I usually dove right into the strategy mode and started creating my plans. But this was different from any other experience that I'd had. Yes, I was excited. I couldn't wait to train leaders for the rest of my life. At the same time, I was also patient, and I felt very settled, very calm. "If this is a calling," I told her, "then doors will open." And they did. Before the week was out, two different groups called to ask me to speak to their leaders. In most areas of my life at that time, I was very ambitious. Earlier in this book, I discussed how goal-oriented I was and how much I paid attention to stats and progress. This was different. This was God's personal invitation for me to work on His agenda, using the talents He had given me, doing work that I sensed would be eternally significant. I felt grateful to be called to something important, but I wasn't thinking in terms of goals or timelines. I just wanted to be my best and do my best. I can honestly say that today, more than 40 years later, I'm just as excited as I was that first day. I'm still thrilled to have been called to teach leadership and develop leaders. I want to add value to leaders who multiply value to others. That's my calling. That's my purpose in life. The characteristics of a calling. You have a purpose in life, too, and you can receive a sense of calling. I don't want you to miss this just because I'm telling you about my calling in context of my faith. You can be of a different faith than me, or have no faith at all, and you can still be called. Your calling can give you a fruitful and fulfilling life, one that fills you with passion and motivates you to make a difference. When it's your calling, you won't have to chase it. You will be captivated by it. I want to help you understand calling, so that you can find yours if you haven't already done so. I want you to be ready when it comes. Number one, your calling matches who you are. No one has ever been called to do something he or she wasn't suited for. Calling always matches who you are. For that reason, it's important for you to be self-aware as you stay attentive to finding your calling. Here are some questions that can help you think about calling. If you could do one thing for the rest of your life, even if you never got paid for it, what would you do? What do people often ask for your help with? What experience have you had that you desire to help others with? What lights you up? What do you love learning about? What could you talk about for hours and hours? What activities are always self-motivated to you? What can you do that makes a positive difference in the lives of others? What would you like to do that would live beyond you? The calling you receive often taps into not just one or two of these things, but perhaps all of them. Number two, your calling taps into your passion. Impacting the world is hard. If you lack passion for the call, your energy will fizzle out. You should use the sleepless night test for this one. If there's a cause you want to pursue that is consuming you so much that you can't sleep at night, that's a sign that you may be called to it. I like the advice of author, philosopher, and civil rights leader Howard Thurman, who said, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who've come alive." Passion is a great driver toward calling. If you're not sure about where your passion lies, ask yourself some of these questions. How do my strengths fuel my passion? What experiences inform my passion? What opportunities align with my passion? How does what I love to do point to my passion? How does what I do well contribute to my passion? How does what others say point to my passion? How does my history of success coincide with my passion? Where does my desire to grow increase my passion? Talent, skills, experience, and opportunities all align with calling, but passion provides the fuel to pursue your calling. Number three, Your calling is important to you, but it's not about you. A true calling is never about the person being called. It's about helping others. A calling moves us from the center of everything in our world to becoming the channel through which good things come to others. As Nelson Mandela said, what counts in life is not the mere fact that we have lived. It is what difference we have made to the lives of others that will determine the significance of the life that we lead. When you're called, you have an important role to play, but it's never about you. I wrote a lot about the subject of significance in my book, Intentional Living. The book is about how significance comes from wanting to make a difference with others, wherever you are, with whatever you have, day by day. In other words, significance means giving beyond yourself, serving beyond yourself, thinking beyond yourself, loving beyond yourself, and seeing beyond yourself. What do all those things have in common? They require you to live beyond yourself. Number four, your calling is bigger than you. A calling always involves something that feels big, something that's bigger than you are. It may intimidate you, it may seem impossible, yet you feel compelled to get out of your comfort zone to fulfill it. You're willing to stretch to complete it. You keep moving forward despite the odds. There's an old story about vision that I came across many years ago. A passerby was looking at a building site during the Middle Ages and saw a craftsman working. "What are you doing?" asked the passerby. "I'm laying stone," the craftsman replied. The passerby continued on his way and saw a second craftsman doing the same kind of work. "What are you doing?" he asked. "I'm building a wall," answered the second craftsman. The passerby was nearly past the building site when he spotted a third man working, and like the other two, he was a stonemason. "What are you doing?" asked the passerby. "I'm building a magnificent cathedral," the third craftsman answered. He saw the size of his task, and he knew what his contribution was. I think you could call this a cathedral calling. That's when you recognize that you are doing something bigger than you, and it may never be completed in your lifetime. But you know, you are part of something big and beautiful. Everyone should be part of a cathedral calling because we were meant for more than simply doing work or building careers. We were made for significance, for making a difference. Number five, your calling changes your perspective. Having a calling makes you see your world differently. Where you once saw only obligations and responsibilities, you will begin to see options and opportunities. No longer will you be focused on the task you are required to do. A whole new world will open up to you of things that you want to do. Let's take a look at the difference between the two perspectives. There is the responsibility perspective. When you are under that, and you see only through that, everything feels heavy. It's a burden. It consumes a lot of your energy. It can seem almost meaningless and rote. It's driven by a sense of duty. It's something that we have to do. It leads to routine and repetition. It discourages efficiency. It tends to drag out in task. It repels others with negativity. You see that responsibility perspective. It gives you a sense of completion and is associated with pushing, and it leads to success in about 10% of our lives. Whereas if we have an opportunity perspective, we see things entirely different. Everything we see feels light and exciting. It's a privilege. It creates energy instead of consuming energy. It feels purposeful and meaningful. It's driven by a sense of optimism. It's something we want to do instead of being something that we have to do. It inspires creativity. It inspires efficiency. It has a desire to get the most bang for our buck. It attracts others with positivity. It gives a sense of possibility to people. It's associated with inspiring, and it leads to success that opens up the hidden 90% in our lives. You see, a calling lifts our hearts and expands our options. It can even be the mundane meaningful. It drastically changes our perspective for the better. Number six, Our calling gives you purpose. Sherry Riley is a John Maxwell team coach who has worked for many years with professional athletes and celebrity entertainers. She recently published her first book called Exponential Living. In it, she wrote about how many people get so caught up in the grind of life that they lose track of why that they do it. She said, "Many high achievers are so focused on working that work becomes an end in itself. They become addicted to the demands, the stress, the sense of accomplishment they get from working hard, even if their hard work isn't leading them anywhere that they want to go. Often high achievers don't even realize they have achieved what they are working for and it's time to move on to something else. Work is labor, folks. That's all it is. It has value only to the extent that it accomplishes something that you truly desire. Many of us high achievers operate under some version of the Puritan work ethic. That is, we believe that work has value in and of itself. So therefore, if we do a lot of it, we must be valuable. So we take on lots of work and keep ourselves very busy, but not necessarily as productive as we could. We exhaust ourselves because we confuse work with value. At the end of a tiring work week, we look back and say, well, at least I did that. We may not be closer to our dream, but we sure did work. At one end of the spectrum are people who are like the ones Sherry described in the higher achievers who work for the sake of work. On the other end are people who work because they have to, but find no fulfillment in what they do. Author Seth Godin was talking to these people when he said, "Instead of wondering what your next vacation is, maybe you should set up a life you don't need to escape from." The answer for both types of people is a sense of purpose that comes from a calling. Take a look at the benefits of the strong sense of purpose that accompanies calling. Purpose will motivate you. That's passion. Purpose will keep your priorities straight. Well, that's discipline. Purpose will develop your potential. It'll cause you to stretch. Purpose will give you power to live in the present. It will create awareness in your life. Purpose will help you elevate your progress. That allows for growth. Purpose will direct your habits. It'll let you be consistent. And purpose will perpetuate an intentional lifestyle, which leads to a life of significance. Parker Palmer, the founder of the Center for Courage and Renewal, said, "Before I can tell my life what I want to do with it, I must listen to my life telling who I am." What he's talking about is calling and the purpose that we derive from it. Number 7, your calling helps you to overcome obstacles. What do you draw upon when you hit a wall in your life or your leadership? Do you rely on grit? Do you draw on discipline? Do you work harder? All of these things are good, but they can't compare to the power of calling to keep you going. My friend Dave Ramsey said, "Higher calling matters. When you care so deeply about the why you're doing what you're doing, then and only then are you operating in a way that allows you to overcome the obstacles." Number 8, your calling brings fulfillment. Nothing in life is as rewarding as fulfilling your calling. Nothing. Wealth, fame, achievement, recognition, all of them fall short. Why do you think so many celebrities and athletes champion causes? They're looking for the fulfillment that comes only from pursuing a calling. I have observed and known many who lived without a calling. As the years pass, their deepest needs and desires go unexplored. They are busy, but they develop a vague anxiety that their life has not achieved its ultimate meaning and significance. They live with a restlessness because they are not firmly attached to the moral purposes that give life its worth. Because they don't follow a calling, they lack the internal compass to make unshakable commitments. They never develop the inner consistency that they long for. Every day they come up short in obtaining the fulfillment that they crave, and it frustrates them. Calling changes everything. It's the missing piece in the puzzle, the plot in a good story, the musical note that completes the piece. Every day I experience the euphoric feeling of fulfillment as I write, speak, and lead. When I'm engaged in my calling, the sense that I experience is, I was born for this. Finding your calling. So what is your calling? Have you already discovered it? Or do you need some help finding your way? Fred Swanaker, the founder of the African Leadership Group, said, "Every now and then, we come to a fork in the road that requires us to either stay on our current life path or change course and do something radically different. If you have not already found your calling, then you are at the fork in the road. I hope you will take the bold way, the radically different path that represents your calling. It may be frightening, it may be uncomfortable, it may feel uncertain, but I can assure you, if you find your calling, you will never regret the difficult journey taken to pursue it, because there's nothing else like it." When I was in a class in college, a professor asked three questions to help us understand ourselves and find the pathway for our lives. Since I first heard them, I have asked them to myself repeatedly. These three questions are, 1, what do I sing about? In other words, what fills my heart? 2, what do I cry about? Or, what breaks my heart? And the last question, what do I dream about? What lifts my heart? These questions set me on a journey that enabled me to discover my calling. As time went by, I experienced moments that spoke to me at a deep level of purpose. Singing moments, times when I knew that my leadership was making a positive difference for people. Crying moments, times when I wept because I saw that bad leadership misused or abused people. Dreaming moments, times when I dreamed of training leaders who would make a difference and a significant impact on people. You'll notice that all these moments related to leadership because that's where my calling is. So I ask you, where do you experience singing, crying, and dreaming moments in your life? As you think about these questions, you may be wondering, how do I know the difference between calling and ego? Now, that's a fair question. Shelley Prevost, co-founder and CEO of Torch, wrote about this in Inc. And here are the main differences she pointed out between the two. Ego fears not possessing something, and calling fears not expressing something. Ego focuses on doing where calling focuses on being. Ego needs some anxiety to survive. Calling needs silence to survive. Ego manifests as burnout, and calling manifests as fulfillment. Ego focuses on the result. Calling focuses on the process. And ego wants to preserve self, where calling wants to impact others. Prevost went on to say that calling is discovered through observation and reflection, through self-discovery, and the unfolding of your life. Another way to say it is that ego drives you and calling draws you. You may find your calling in a moment, as I did, but I don't think you can force it to appear immediately if you haven't already discovered it. It usually takes time to unfold. I can look back at years of leadership moments, good and bad experiences, feelings of both discontent and contentment that set me up for my calling and prepared me for it. My best advice is to be attentive. Pay attention to your feelings. Take time to reflect. Learn from your experiences. Never dismiss your dreams. And when your moment comes, embrace it. How to maximize your calling. I don't know what phase of life you're in as you listen to this book. Maybe you're simply doing a job and hoping for more. Perhaps you've developed a career yet still long for something more. If either of these is true, keep working your way toward your calling. However, you might be in the season of life where you know your calling and you're working out what to do with it. If that describes you, then I want to give you some advice. And if this does not describe you, then mark these words for when you do enter into your calling season. 1, integrate a daily focus with a long-term perspective. In his book Life Cycle Completed, Eric Erickson told a joke about a man who was on his deathbed. And as he lay there with his eyes closed, his wife whispered to him, naming every member of the family who was there to wish him shalom. "And who," he suddenly asked, sitting up abruptly, is minding the store. People who have a sense of calling need to maintain a daily focus without losing their long-term perspective. I think of this as using both the clock and the compass.